This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Jansen. Into center field. Here comes Kiermaier. Phillips has tied the game. A Rose Arena coming around. Throw home. Now he stumbles. But the ball gets away. Tampa Bay wins it.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Todd Gurley to the goal line. Touchdown. I think he thought about waiting and letting the clock run out.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
Herbert rolling to his right. Now looking for the throw. Instead, tucks it, spins off, dives to the end zone. Touchdown, Chargers. Herbert adds one on the ground to his three through the air.
What can't Justin Herbert do is the question I would be asking at this point in time.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, 12:02 in the Rose City. Time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan. Brandon Sprague, Andy Dirt Johnson in with you. What's poppin'?
What is happening? How's everybody's weekend?
It was good.
It was a good weekend?
Low key, it was good.
Good little weekend out there?
It wasn't bad.
It was one of those weekends where you just kind of, I had multiple moments just being like, man, you know what? Gotta say this. I love sports.
Yeah, Saturday was...
There was a few of those this weekend.
Quite amazing.
The walk-off for the World Series, that moment, last night, Sunday night football game. There was a period, too, in the 10 a.m.
One of the greatest fighters of all time just retired after.
Just after a fight, like nobody ever touched him. And then the slate of the 10 a.m. games, like every single one of those I felt like came down to the final possession. I'm over-exaggerating, of course, but there was like five or six of them that like final play, touchdown, walk-off, like... It was unbelievable. It was a great weekend.
No, I didn't want to get stuck in hyperbole, but I'm watching that game four. Mm-hmm. And what sucks about it is game four isn't going to get, it's not going to get enough conversation and attention because we just had game five last night and the Dodgers are now up 3-2. So they responded to such a heartbreaking loss.
If you flipped them, it would be a much bigger deal.
It would be monster deal, right? If the Dodgers had gone up 3-1, then everybody's thinking, oh, this is over. And the Rays end up having the exact same game play out this same way in five to stay alive. Oh my God. And unfortunately, my first thought was that the greatest ending to a baseball game I've ever seen in my life? I can't think of another that comes close. But again, don't want to get stuck into the instant hot take.
Caught in the moment.
And then the other was the, oh my God, that game's not going to get its just due on the national media landscape because they have game five on Sunday.
Yeah, I'll make a comparison. I think we had something similar in the NBA finals. I would argue game five of the NBA finals was far and away the best game of the series that went back and forth. And that was the game that the Lakers had the final possession with the game winning shot. And Morris just threw the ball out of bounds and Danny Green missed the open three. Like that was an unbelievable basketball game that went down to the wire. But I want to say it happened on a Friday or a Saturday. And then by Sunday was the game six clincher and the Lakers blew them out
the whole way.
And that was kind of it. Like you forgot about that game. That was a classic game. And Morris had a J.R. Smith moment where he just threw the ball out of bounds, but we never really ended up talking about it that much. Thankfully, at least the World Series is still going. So if Tampa is to win, what's the next game? Tomorrow night, I think, is game six. If Tampa is to win, I think that will be a lingering storyline. To your question of the finish, though, I think I saw the stat that was like the fourth game in the history of the World Series that had ended on an error being the final play. I would say that is the best and worst finish that I have ever seen to a World Series game. Like, we've seen walk-off hits, and those are memorable. Of course, ones that have... won a series.
Joe Carter just had his anniversary last week.
Joe Carter's walk off. I think that was game three of the World Series. Like, there, no doubt, iconic moments. But in terms of a one-run lead, and you don't really think that they're going to do it, the guy up at the plate had, like, two hits all season, I felt like.
218 hitter.
Dude, he can't touch anything. And he was behind in the count. He had two bad strike calls in the count. He's down 1-2, like... And then he muscles one to center, and then just the comedy of errors that ensued of Taylor boots it, kind of a bad cutoff throw. Muncy made a bad throw to Will Smith. He didn't handle it. The runner fell down. He was just laying on the ground.
Yeah.
And he ended up being a safe with the walk. That was an unbelievable moment.
Yeah, I got to admit, I was not trying to think. The Mets-Red Sox series was 86, right?
It was actually 34 years to the day of Buckner's behind the bag booting the ground ball that won game six.
So that would have been October. I wasn't even alive yet.
No.
So I didn't see Buckner live.
No.
A lot of people would probably say that one because the Red Sox were close to breaking the curse. Yeah. And
I believe that was the last World Series game that ended in an air.
Yeah.
There was a handful of them before that, but that was the last one. It was 34 years to the day.
See, the thing about Buckner, though, that's different is that was just the Buckner air. That game was the Taylor Duff.
Yes.
Mixed in with the questionable cutoff throw to home from Muncy, mixed with the Will Smith could not catch a pretty standard 11-foot throw to him to swipe right, a Rosarina right. at home and get him out. Instead, right. he gives up the winning run.
On top of the base runner falling over. It wasn't like he was running full speed. He fell over.
He did like somersaults forward.
He was laying on the ground. He was dead to rights, and he had to get up and go home, man. It was unbelievable.
Now, we have a loaded show today. Uh-huh. It's pretty much packed with football. I don't think that's much of a surprise to anybody.
It was a big football weekend.
However, to my earlier point, that game isn't getting enough run. I'm turning on morning shows. All they're talking about is Russell Wilson and Tom Brady.
Sure.
Football, football, football. It's all football, and I get it. That game deserves a little more.
Deserves its due, man.
I don't care if the Rays lost last night. I watched that game too. But I think the ending of that game deserves more. So we pulled some audio for you.
Ooh.
And it's about 2 minutes and 15 seconds.
Okay.
And what transpires on this is about five different calls from five different spots. Joe Buck, Fox Deportes LA, Russian TV, I think Charlie Steiner, the LA Dodgers radio network, he's on this one. And there might be another one that I'm blanking on. So it's consolidated into one. We got this on Twitter. And it's fantastic. It's about 2:15. And if you watch Saturday, you know exactly how exciting that ending was. I was in a room of guys who had no horse in the fight. And we're sitting there just going nuts. Cannot believe that the game ends that way. So here it is, 2:15 long. All of the final World Series calls from about four to five different outlets.
Swing, line drive, right center. It's a base hit. Kiermaier around third. He scores the tying run to third base and being waved home and falling down. And now they've got a call between third and home. The ball gets away. In to score, Rosarena. The Rays have won.
There's your Dan Johnson moment. Oh, my. They're trying to catch him in the outfield and they...
Le tira, batazo de hit para el jardín central. Viene anotando una carrera, se le escapa la bola. La corta, viene para la goma, viene el tiro. Se devuelve, agarraron a Rosarena, se le escapó. Ganaron los Rays, señor.
It's a swing and a ball lined in the right center, a base hit. Kiermaier around third. It's booted by Taylor. A Rosarena coming home, and now he's caught. And now Smith drops the ball, and a Rosarena scores. Smith had the ball. At the plate, they had a Rosarena caught.
Batazo, la pelota imparable. El juego se va a empatar. Pierde la pelota en el central Taylor. Viene el tiro hacia el home. No hay nadie. A Rosarena está anotando. ¡Qué juego! En la Serie Mundial se ha empatado.
And Phillips is cashed in. A base hit back up the middle. Here's Kiermaier to score. The ball's mishandled. And now they've got a Rosarena to run down. A Rosarena scores and the Rays have won the game. Santa Maria!
A остается и выбивает Филлипс. А вот это уже 7-7 как минимум. А может быть и 8-7. Ну-ка. 8-7.
Фантастика, фантастика. Розарена в доме. Как это случилось?
And it's looped into center field for a base hit. And it's bobbled by Taylor in center. Kiermaier comes in to score. And a Rosarena is held at third now.
Oh, well, cut off. There's two tweets on that one that connect them. But
God, that was so good.
Oh, yeah. I loved it. I thought that was one of the greater sports moments. And to be honest, I don't give a damn if you like baseball or not. That is going to go down as one of the crazier sporting events in everybody's entire life.
Yeah, the wife and the dog had started to meander their way into the bedroom, and that moment happened, and I started yelling like, oh my God, I can't, like, just, you can't believe what was happening with two outs in that situation. And they came running out, the dog started barking. It's like, I've never seen anything like that before. And that game,
insane.
You know, I'll criticize the first, what it have been, three games of the World Series. They were snoozers. Game one, the Dodgers won pretty handily. Game two, the Rays won. It got tight a little bit late, but there wasn't a ton of intrigue. Game three, Walker Buehler was dominant. The only intrigue was watching to see if the under was going to hit, and a meaningless solo home run cost me some money on Friday. Like, the first three games sucked, man. That game four, the ending was memorable, but that was an incredible game leading up to it with multiple lead changes, back and forth, momentum, and it felt like the Dodgers had finally taken over, and then that happened in the bottom of the ninth inning.
Yeah, so game four, Dodgers Rays of the World Series, just an epic ending with a Rosarena coming around third, falling, thinking he's going to get caught after the game was tied at seven, and Will Smith lost the throw at home, and Rosarena got up and slid in. And they ended up winning that one, tying the series at two. I thought they were cooked. I did. I thought the Dodgers were going to win the series in five, like I thought.
Yeah.
I give them so much credit. It sucks they lost last night, but we'll see if they can respond.
Well, it would have been
tomorrow.
Over. The series would have been done if it wasn't for that moment right now.
Well, we got a busy show today. We're going to start with the Seahawks and Cardinals Sunday night football game. Boy, that was a wild one as well. Coming down to the end, blowing a 10-point lead in the final few minutes. And Arizona winning that in overtime. Our daily ticker stop today is Michael Renner of Pro Football Focus. He wrote a piece on the Steelers. He thinks they're the best team in the AFC. So we'll talk to him about the piece, and we'll talk to him about some other NFL stuff at 12:30. And then Todd McKim, he covers Cal for their Sideline Radio Network. He's going to join us at 1:45 today as we continue rolling on with our Pac-12 preview, college football to get to as well, and the NFL whip around at 1. Dirt and Sprague loaded show. We'll start with the Seahawks as they lose their first game of the year against the Arizona Cardinals. What'd you make of that one? We'll start there. Dirt and Sprague on the Fan.
So many times there was a man who met a girl and took her hand. He told her, never will I leave you, my love.
This is Dirt and Sprague, gone 1080, The Fan.
Michael Renner of Pro Football Focus will join us coming up here on the Daily Ticker at the bottom of the hour. We'll recap the big storylines from Week 7. The Seahawks came back from their bye week. They went to the desert, and they blew a 10-point lead in the final few minutes of the fourth quarter to the Arizona Cardinals, who came back, pushed the game to overtime, and then Isaiah Simmons. It looked like Seattle would have a chance there because Gonzalez missed the field goal that would have won it, which, separate note, real quick, I don't want to derail the whole thing. Sometimes coaches do really stupid things, and what I've noticed with NFL coaches is their reluctancy to continue playing offense and just settling for 40-plus yard field goals on second down.
Yeah.
When your offense is moving the ball on a very crappy defense, I don't understand why you go, yeah, we're going to kick a 41-yarder on second down just because you just had a play that knocked you back 3-4 yards. You largely were moving the ball at 6-plus yards per play. Might you trust the offense for another down at least their Kingsbury, and then maybe help get your field goal kicker better distance?
He is so lucky today that they didn't end up losing that game, because not only did he settle way too early for the field goal, you mentioned the first down play. What the hell was that? Like, they just hiked it and Murray ran to the left, and he almost got decapitated. Nobody blocked the Seahawks safety. And then they were like, all right, whatever, second down, run the field goal unit out there. And they almost got a delay a game penalty. He wasn't even paying attention. And his assistant coaches had to come up to him and tell him to call timeout, that then iced his own kicker. He made the one during the timeout, and then he missed the next one. Like, there is nobody luckier than Kingsbury. That was a big win for Arizona, and it kind of reshapes the NFC West race a little bit, and it reshapes the race from the number one overall seed in the NFC. But if they would have lost that game, let's say Russ takes him down and scores in overtime or the DK touchdown stands, everybody today is talking about how Kingsbury is a Big 12 coach that's not ready for the big leagues.
Well, and speaking of Seattle, they had an opportunity to win it. They couldn't. Russ gets picked off by rookie Isaiah Simmons. And Russell Wilson last night, you know, not everything's blamed on him, but 33 of 50, 388, three touchdowns and three picks. Yeah. Obviously, the biggest pick was in overtime, but the most memorable one was the one that didn't necessarily involve him. It involved his stud second-year wideout, DK Metcalf, running down Buda Baker after being like 7 yards behind him at the start of things near the goal line. Buda Baker got tracked down by DK Metcalf and tackled, and it was unbelievable. It's one of those plays that we'll probably remember but might fall in the history of great never-give-up plays just sure. because they lost that game. But Russell Wilson, really good. And then also some really head-scratching moments last night.
This one, I think that just kind of summed up all of Seattle. They had moments where their defense came up with stops. They played okay in the first half. You mentioned the play where DK runs him down and doesn't allow Buda Baker to score on the pick six. The defense held him on that drive. Like, for as bad as Seattle's defense was, that saved a touchdown. It was a game in which they weren't able to put it together for an entirety of 4 quarters. And Russ had so many moments where you're just in awe and your jaw's on the floor. Some of those moonball touchdowns, that one at the end of the half that he threw to Lockett. Like,
God, that was
incredible,
a perfect
throw. Man. That fourth down touchdown pass, the other one to Lockett, that they was a touchdown, then it wasn't a touchdown, then it was a touchdown again. Like, he makes those kind of plays and you're just in awe of what he's able to do. But what was strange about this performance is he has been so efficient in not turning the football over, and that ended up having a huge impact. I mean, scored 27 points in the first half. He threw a pick in the end zone. It could have easily been 34 points in the first half. All three of the picks weren't good. Like, the one that he floated out to the side, that DK ended up making the play, not a great throw. He had another one where he just kind of lobbed it up and thought maybe DK was going to keep running. He stopped. That was a weird play. I think Peterson had that one also in the end zone, took points off the board. And then the last one of the game, you knew Arizona was blitzing, and they just didn't really seem prepared for it. Like, his receivers didn't even really turn around, and yeah. I wasn't even sure if he was throwing it to Lockett or DK. He just kind of hiked it and threw it, which I get because he was under pressure a ton, so you want to get rid of the football quickly. But Simmons, a rookie who was barely playing for Arizona because I don't trust him, ended up coming up with a play of his career.
According to ESPN Next Gen Stats, DK Metcalf reached 22.64 miles per hour chasing down Buda Baker and traveled 114.8 yards.
Are you kidding me?
To make that play.
That is one of the like stronger athletic feats that I have ever seen. Buda Baker's fast. And he had a 10-yard head start, and he chased him down after like 80 yards. Unbelievable.
I think they compared the 40 times between those two players, and DK had like 0.8 tenths faster 40 time. Right, I'm like, well, that's where the 0.8s comes from.
Yeah, that guy is one of the stranger athletic freaks in all of professional sports.
That last pick, by the way, Russ, from time to time during a season, he'll just have inexplicable interceptions. That last one, it looked to me, and I saw him take a lot of responsibility like a quarterback normally does, but I it looked like he was waiting for like a quick, just like a little 4 yard in for his receiver to get as many yards as they possibly could.
Like, I got to hike it and throw it. You got to be ready.
Because they were blitzing him the entire time in the second half for disguising blitzes, so it was really hard read for that O-line. And it looked like his wideouts weren't on that same page. So when he threw it, Isaiah Simmons was the only one that picked it up, and he nabbed it and helped him get the win. But Seattle falls yet again in the desert. I think we've learned a valuable note. We are never betting on the Seahawks in Arizona for how long?
Never.
It
never
is so weird what goes on there for them.
They always play classic games in that stadium. It feels like, or games you want to forget about that are 6-6 ties. It felt like that one had a chance to be a tie too when Arizona missed the field goal to late with the Kingsbury mistake. You know, for Seattle, I think it highlights the issues that they're going to have going forward. It's not an eliminating game for them by any stretch. They're a damn good football team, and Russell Wilson, look, he made incredible plays and bad plays last night. He's still one of the top 2-3 quarterbacks in the NFL. The issue with them is going to continue to be the offense cannot take a half of football off or you're going to lose. They were able to come back after a bad offensive first half against Minnesota. That's because Minnesota sucks. When you're playing playoff caliber teams, you can't have the second half that they did. I mean, for as good as they were offensively in the first half and scoring 27 points, you knew that defense was going to give up at least, what, 14 in the second half? Like, you knew Arizona was going to find a way back into the game, and it's incumbent on Russ and the rest of those guys on offense to continue to put points on the board. They only scored 7 points in the second half, and it was that crazy fourth down conversion to lock it that, you know, some wondered, should they even go for it or should you kick a field goal? So that's the way that they're going to have to win. 34 points is a lot in the NFL. You think that usually is enough, but when you have a defense like Seattle's, there's going to be some weekends, especially against an offense with Kyler Murray on it, that that's not going to be enough, and they only scored 7 points in the second half.
Well, I think that's kind of my big takeaway. We got Michael Renner coming up here at the bottom of the hour, Pro Football Focus. The Hawks lose to the Cardinals. My biggest takeaway, you know, the Seattle offense, you're right, they need to score more than, what, 7 in the entire second half and overtime. You got to kind of put that game away. Sometimes, though, your offense is going to do you a huge favor. 27 points in a first half is a pretty big favor.
It should be enough.
And yeah, here you are, or here we are, I should say, the proverbial all of us that watch that game, and we're talking Russ and the picks and executing and getting into the end zone. It's yet again, another week, we're just not talking much about the defense. Are we just...
I think we're just...
We just resigned to the fact that the defense
is one of
the worst in the league, and it's going to suck all year. And
it is what it is.
Jamal Adams might make it slightly better, but overall, they're going to get torched by better quarterbacks.
Well, I think you keep an eye on the trade deadline, which is a week from tomorrow. And there's certain names of pass rushers that are out there, might be available. Carlos Dunlap had a very strange weekend in Cincinnati. For those who follow that story, he had like a meltdown on the sideline and then tried to sell his house on Twitter. It was not a good look. So some people are now assuming that he's going to be dealt by Cincinnati in the next week. I think that is the main thing that you're missing. Your secondary isn't dominant, but having Jamal Adams back will help a lot. I think your linebackers are okay. You have one of the best in the NFL.
I want to ask Michael Renner that. I don't know, man. Their linebacking play wasn't very good last night.
I think everything is added on top of not having a defensive line. They have no pass rush. They have nobody that can control the run. They have nobody that can get after the quarterback in the pocket and make its night tough. And so when you have to blitz constantly to do it, it makes the job tougher for the linebackers. Your secondary has to cover for a longer time
because
he's just sitting
secondary
back there, and he's going to have all day to throw. So the biggest need that they have is a pass rusher, and maybe they make a move for that in the next week before the deadline. But they're just going to have to, until then, you're going to have to outscore people, and last night they weren't able to do it.
Well, we'll continue talking about this and all the other things going on in the NFL, including the Pittsburgh Steelers getting a monster win on the road in Tennessee. Tennessee had a huge comeback, but Pittsburgh was able to hold on. Michael Renner writes for Pro Football Focus. He wrote about Pittsburgh. He thinks Pittsburgh should be the proverbial favorite in the AFC right now, and that's including the Chiefs. So we'll talk to him about that column. We'll ask him about the Seahawks-Cardinals game and everything else in the NFL. Michael Renner, Pro Football Focus, joins us next for the Daily Ticker. But first, Rust with a sports update.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
This is the Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague visit the insiders that are covering the stories you've heard about, and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Actually, I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, Michael Renner writes. He's the lead writer for Pro Football Focus, PFF.com. He's got his new article out, Pittsburgh Steelers' dominant defensive line makes them the favorites in the AFC, going through why he thinks the Steelers should be looked at more so than the Chiefs and even the Ravens. We'll get into that in just a minute, but he joins us now. He's on Twitter at PFF_Mike. Mike, welcome in, man. It's good to have you on the show. We're just talking Seahawks and Cardinals and, you know, a back and forth about the offense not doing much in the second half, and yet here we are. The defense continues just to get torched by really good offenses. What do you make of the Seattle Seahawks? How do you really gauge where they should be in the NFC landscape?
Yeah, it's difficult because, I mean, their defense is about as bad as it gets. I mean, they're probably a bottom five defense in the NFL right now, but they're also, you know, with Russell Wilson at the helm and DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, they're a mismatch. They're going to score points on pretty much any defense they face this season. So, and we know offense is what drives success in the NFL. It's why, you know, Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs are considered the favorites to repeat his chance because they're just so dominant offensively and that they'll always be in any single game because they can score. So I think that's kind of what the Seahawks are right now. is that they're just going to have to play shootouts kind of the rest of the way and hope that it falls in their favor come playoff time.
Yeah, getting Jamal Adams back will help, no doubt, when he's finally there, and Snacks Harrison as well. But is there any other move out there that you see on the board that they can make? The trade deadline's a little over a week away. Like, is there anything else out there that can make that defense not great, because you can't improve it that much, but just go from being like one of the worst to, yeah, just run-of-the-mill defense?
Yeah, I wonder if J.J. Watt will be available for the Texans. I know they desperately need defensive line help. I think the stat I saw this morning was they pressured Kyler Murray once last night on his dropbacks. They're really just – that's their kind of the weakness of this team when they were at their best. It's that zone defense is predicated on getting pressure quick enough to that there's not these gaping holes in the zones down the field for opposed quarterbacks to exploit, and that's kind of been their MO all season long, is that they just can't get pressure at all. So I think someone like that would help a lot, even though he's not, the J.J. Watt we've seen in years past. They just need anyone at this point that could affect an opposing quarterback.
Yeah, Michael Renner is our guest here. Pro Football Focus does a great job. He's one of their lead writers. He's got an article on the Pittsburgh Steelers and their dominant performance yesterday. And we'll dive into that. I do have one more Seahawk question for you, Michael. So apologies for just leading with three Seahawk questions. But I'm curious about the defense. Do you think it's more scheme? Because you look at that side of the ball and there's name recognition kind of all over. Griffin left with a concussion last night, but people think okay of him. Bobby Wagner, obviously one of the 99 club in Madden at one point. Is it scheme to you, or is it just personnel?
To me, it's personnel. And we keep saying here at PFF that defense is a weak link problem. Like if you have multiple liabilities, and they do, in that secondary, those are the guys that are going to get thrown at. Those are the guys that are going to get exploited. I don't care if you have Jamal Adams. And yes, he's going to help to some degree, but people just aren't going to attack Jamal Adams. They're going to attack elsewhere. And so you need to be kind of complete across the board, or you need to be able to get pressure quick enough that they're not going to have those options to go to. At the moment, Seahawks can't do either.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one of the showdowns of the weekend was that Pittsburgh-Tennessee game, and first half looked like, oh, God, Tennessee didn't show up. Pittsburgh's going to run away with this thing. Second half, it tightens up, and you get a missed field goal that potentially would have sent it into overtime. Two-parter for you. One, how impressed were you with the win by Pittsburgh, and then how concerning was the second half and Ben Roethlisberger throwing a couple of bad interceptions that allowed Tennessee back into that game?
Yeah, I think that's the thing I'm most impressed with, is that they had a pretty poor game offensively. They had a -3 turnover margin, which is almost a death knell in the NFL usually, to give away the ball three times, not get the ball back at all from the other team, and still win a game, and especially a game against a team that was in the AFC title game a year ago, a team that was undefeated heading into the week, a very good team, and to still come away with the win when you objectively didn't play your best football whatsoever, to me, the most impressive part of that. And like I kind of explain in the article, teams are just kind of having to game plan around this juggernaut defensive line that the Steelers have. And you saw the Titans, throw downfield far less than any time they had all season, just because they knew they weren't going to have the time to scheme open, guys down the football field. That's kind of a given when you play the Steelers this year. And that is why their defense has been probably the best in the NFL.
Is it even up for debate? Do they have the best wideouts in the NFL? I know you wrote about the defensive line and the havoc they create, and it's obvious, man. They are a bunch of beasts. But on the other side, it just feels like it's an embarrassment of riches. Do you think they have the best wideout core in the NFL?
It might be the deepest. I'd probably still lean the Cowboys in terms of their 1-2-3 with CeeDee Lamb and, Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup. But, yeah, that's the thing, is like they have this fantastic defense and then also an offense built to, they can play from behind. If they do have to come from behind, they can air it out and, come back in a hurry on you as well.
Yeah, yeah, they can win in different ways, no doubt about that. One team that's making a lot of people eat some crow here the last couple of weeks is Tampa Bay, as they lost in the opening week to New Orleans and then that bad loss to Chicago on a Thursday night. That was a pretty dominating win. They're adding Antonio Brown to the mix. Gronkowski looks healthy again. Just what have you made of this resurgence of Tampa the last couple of weeks, and then how Antonio Brown fits into that offense?
Oh, man, it's silly what they have offensively once Antonio Brown gets there. You can't play man coverage against an offense like that with those wide receivers. You're just not going to be able to match up 1-2-3 across the board. So that already is kind of dictating what opposing defenses can do to you. They basically are just hoping that Tom Brady's arm doesn't fall off a cliff in the next few months, which I don't foresee it at this point if it hasn't happened already at his age. So the most interesting thing to me, though, is their secondary and their cornerbacks. They got Carlton Davis looks like a top 10 cornerback in the NFL. Jamel Dean looks like a top 10 to 15 cornerback in the NFL with the way he's played so far this year. Like, those guys that they've drafted in the past couple of years have really turned around this defense in a big way this season.
Michael Renner is our guest here on the Daily Ticker, Pro Football Focus lead writer, PFF.com. Go find his latest article on the Steelers. He thinks they're the favorites in the AFC. And we can talk about the Chiefs, but real quick, I wanted to get another AFC team that a lot of people were liking early. In fact, I was getting tweeted at that I was too disrespectful to Josh Allen 3 weeks ago, Michael, and they get their ass kicked by the Titans. They never really were that close against the Chiefs. And boy, what an ugly win yesterday against the Jets. What have you seen with Buffalo? What is so different about the Buffalo Bills?
I mean, I think it was more, it was fluky. It's to start the year. It was not almost sustainable. A lot of, you know, Josh Allen's big plays and a lot of his production was him scrambling and making plays outside the pocket, which it's just not going to happen every single week. You know, from the pocket passing is far more sustainable on a week-to-week basis. And so I think we've seen him come crashing back down to earth in that regard. And it was kind of unlike anything I'd ever seen before those first 4 weeks. He had never been an accurate quarterback. He had never been a guy who had succeeded, you know, in that realm. And all of a sudden, he was one of the most accurate quarterbacks in the NFL. But, oh, you know, it was still a small sample size. It was only a handful of games in the NFL. And something we preach out here all the time that, you know, don't overreact to only a few games because of how, like I said, that's still such a small sample size in the grand scheme of things. And now I think we've seen, yes, he's still a better quarterback than he was a year ago, and his rookie season has progressed a lot, but this is far more in line with a realistic progression from year one to two to three for Josh Allen.
Yeah. What the hell has happened with New England, man? They were a team that it felt like it was playing pretty good football. They had that close loss to Seattle, you know, a nice win over the Raiders. And then COVID strikes, they come back, they can't move the ball against Denver. They lose at home. And then I think tied for the worst loss in the history of the Belichick era in New England, Cam Newton gets benched. Like, what the hell is going on there? And is that thing salvageable?
Yeah, I don't think it is. And it's because you still don't have good receivers there. Like, you still don't have guys that can get open. That was the problem last year with Brady, and that looked like, you know, things could be different, but they were playing the Seahawks defense. And we kind of just touched on it being, you know, a disaster in their own right. When they do play, face good defenses like Denver, like San Francisco this past week, their guys aren't getting open. And Cam Newton, I mean, they kind of had schemed that entire offense around his rushing ability. And you can't really do that if you're playing from behind. You can't run the ball, you know, all day long if you don't have a lead. So they're not really built to play from behind like we've seen the past few weeks with them. And his arms, his, you know, the shoulder and the accuracy that everyone was worried about, and that's why he didn't get a contract this past offseason, I think is kind of coming back to bite him now, so to speak. Like, it just, I think you're seeing the sort of same issues we saw towards the end of his career in Carolina, and that he's just not the guy that won the MVP back in 2015.
Yeah, a lot of balls on the ground yesterday against San Francisco. Michael Renner is our guest here. Pro Football Focus, PFF.com, their lead writer. Follow him on Twitter at PFF_Mike. Justin Herbert finally got his first win, although a lot would say his production would have gotten another one at some point because he is absolutely balling since he's taken that job last minute against Kansas City. He had a little bit of a clunker. They collectively did against Carolina, but largely they've had losses, but they've been close. He's moving the ball down the field, and yesterday he continued his stellar play. What have you made of Justin Herbert, and were you right or were you wrong on Herbert about what you thought of him coming out of the draft?
I'll say I was wrong about how quickly he would translate to the NFL.
Okay.
But I don't think it's any, I don't think there's any, the biggest takeaway that I had or the biggest worry I had with him was big games, you know, pressure situations. How did he perform? How would he perform? And would he be able to rise to that? Because he was continuously small in his career at Oregon when it came to those situations. So I do think that that remains to be seen. And will he be that guy? But I think how quickly it's translated to the NFL and how different he's looked in a vastly different scheme that pushes the ball downfield far more has been impressive. There's no, you know, sort of sugarcoating it. He looks like he belongs in the NFL and looks like a capable starter from day one, which is rare to see from a rookie. He's probably had one of the most impressive rookie sort of starts to his career over the past 5 to 10 years. Right? He's probably in the top five quarterback in terms of, you know, what he's done as a rookie over that span. So pass off to him. But I do think that, again, it's still only a handful of games, and we've yet to see him really, you know, from start to finish dominate a team. So you still have some accuracy issues, still some little things like that. So I'm curious to see how his season does progress here, and if they do start to roll and get a few more wins under his belt.
Well, he's got a good start, Michael. Burrow showed some really good flashes yesterday, yet another good performance from him. What are you expecting from Tua this week as he is now the starter in Miami? Get you out of here on that one.
I just hope he doesn't get killed, man. I just hope they can protect him with the scheme a little bit there, because Fitzpatrick was getting the ball out of his hands quickly, and he's a veteran. He knows how to sort of protect himself and not take a lot of shots. Tua's going to be in for a rude awakening coming from that Alabama offensive line with how talented they were and how little pressure he faced to Miami. So that's all I really want to see, is Tua healthy coming out of this one, because last time we did see him on the football field, he suffered that catastrophic injury. So no more hits on Tua is all I want.
Absolutely. Michael Renner, lead writer at Pro Football Focus, PFF.com. Go there now. Check out his Pittsburgh Steeler article. It's really good. He makes the case and says he thinks they're the favorite in the AFC right now. Their defensive line is just creating so much havoc and chaos, not to mention the weapons they have on offense. Good piece on the Steelers there, Michael, and thanks so much for hopping on with us, man. We enjoyed the conversation.
For sure. Thanks for having me on. Have a good one.
All right, there we go. Good stuff from Michael Renner of Pro Football Focus, PFF.com, on pretty much everything in the NFL.
I think we touched on everything. Yeah, Seattle's defense sucks. Pittsburgh, really impressive. I think when you have a game that went the way that one did against Tennessee, it's easy to focus on the second half and the fact that they almost blew that lead and overlooked the fact that they ended up winning the game. And they were the first team this year to beat Tennessee, and I believe the only undefeated team left in the NFL at this point. So that was a statement win, I think, for Pittsburgh. And if you eventually get that playoff matchup against Kansas City, that'd be a lot of fun.
All right, we're a little over. Coming up next, we'll give you updated odds on the toughest division in sports, the NFC West. Who are the favorites right now, and who's the favorite in the NFC? We'll go through that. We got the NFL whip around coming up as well. Dirt and Sprague, we're back with more on 1080 The Fan.
I'm so happy, cause today found my friends in my head. I'm so ugly, that's okay, cause so are you.
This is Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
Well, the Seahawks lost last night makes the NFC West very intriguing. The updated odds to win the NFC West. Do you think you could properly guess how it stacks up in Vegas? How does Vegas view the NFC West right now from first to last? First having, obviously, the best odds to win.
I would say Seattle would still be number one.
Okay, give me a second.
You got to find your buzzer, or your bell.
I hate this whole...
Are they available?
Okay.
Are they click? Oh, okay.
You're correct.
I'd say 55%.
Well, it's not a percentage.
Oh, it doesn't actually break it down.
Vegas,
okay.
Like a minus 130,
gotcha. Okay.
Pluses, et cetera. Yeah, we're getting to that. But.
I'd say Seattle number one. Okay. I think based on the win yesterday and the fact that they're 2-0 in the division, you got to put Arizona number two.
You're correct.
San Francisco, the way that they've looked dominant the last 2 weeks and just beat the Rams at home, I would say would be number three. Wow, really?
Yeah.
The Rams have higher odds than the 49ers? What are we looking at here? They just beat him 2 weeks ago.
Well, that doesn't matter according to Vegas.
They just handed Bill Belichick the worst loss in his tenure in New England.
That doesn't matter.
Let's see how the Rams fare tonight against Chicago before we go all in on that one.
Seahawks minus 155 updated odds to win the division. Cardinals plus 425. I don't know if I can buy them yet. I know that was a good win, and they're 5-2, but I...
You got to give him credit, but
Kingsbury's going to screw two more games up. I know it.
Well, and it was one of those games, like we had somebody, you know, one of our people on saying Seattle, their 5-0 record was built on crappy teams, and now they finally played a good team.
They had a couple games make an argument.
Yeah, Minnesota's not very good. No. New England all of a sudden doesn't look good. Dallas doesn't look good, but I would say they played a different New England and different Dallas team. This New England is now a shell of itself from where they were and what they look like. And Dallas with Andy Dalton or whoever the hell is going to start next weekend, that's not the same Dallas team that they faced early on. I'll say this, though, too. I mean, those are the kind of games that easily could have gone either way. there were a number of different plays. First off, the field goal issue where the guy used leverage or whatever the hell it was. I mean, that would have been a 27-20 game in the fourth quarter, I believe was still the score. Like, there's still a chance that Seattle doesn't hand that ball back. In that instance, there was a penalty on
the hold.
The hold on the Metcalf touchdown. There was a personal foul penalty on Bobby Wagner that I thought was complete horse ass that handed Arizona an extended drive. Not to mention the Buda Baker helmet-to-helmet hit that went unnoticed, and Seattle had a punt on that drive. So give Arizona credit, man. They made more plays in the end, and they came up big with the interceptions and the game-winning field goal. That's one of those toss-up games that could have gone either way.
Okay, so if you are a betting man. You're a degenerate, actually.
I am, and I had a really bad weekend, so don't listen to whatever I'm about to say.
So poor Andy Johnson, he has like $5 left and he's betting. Are you betting at -155 on the Hawks, +425 on the Cardinals, +500 on the Rams, or +600 on suddenly the resurgent 49ers who were getting into the hard part of the schedule and are 2-0 on it?
Look, if you're asking me to make a smart gambling pick, I'm taking the 49ers with those odds. I think you give me +600 on that. I know they're still two games out of first place, I believe, at 3-3.
Yeah, but everybody's over 500.
Everybody's over, or 4-3, I guess it would be now. Yeah. Over 500. They got to get another division win under their belt. Their only one to the season is the Rams. But I like the way that they're figuring out how to play better defense despite all the injuries. I think that's a roster that's going to continue to get healthy as the year goes on. And, you know, we buried them 2 weeks ago when they lost that game to Miami and they couldn't score and they couldn't stop them. Like, it was it. We fired Kyle Shanahan. This is done. And they have done nothing but look dominant over the last 2 weeks. And I think you got to give Shanahan a lot of credit. He finally got Deebo Samuel back. They're using him all over the place. Ayuk has been a tremendous rookie for him. And George Kittle's the best tight end in the NFL. So he's using his weapon smartly. Jeff Wilson has all of a sudden come on to be a great running back.
He just got hurt.
And he got hurt. But yeah. I think it's a high ankle sprint. So they're hoping he's back sooner rather than later. Mostert's banged up. Like, all the injuries, we looked at the 49ers and said when they lost to Miami, they're done because of that stretch of schedule. And I think we ballparked it. If they go 3-3 over the next six games, maybe they're still in the race. Well, they're off to a 2-0 start, and they look pretty damn good doing it.
Odds to win the NFC. Can you guess the favorite in the NFC?
And like just to win the entire conference?
Yep.
I would say right now it has to be Green Bay or Tampa. Yeah, Tampa.
Tampa Bay.
Tampa's
Can you guess the second?
Pretty damn good. I would still go Green Bay. Not Green Bay, huh?
No.
Is it Seattle? Yeah.
Yeah.
Then Green Bay. Hey.
Then who?
Then who?
It's a tough one.
That is a tough one because Chicago only has one loss. Is it New Orleans? Yeah. I wouldn't touch that New Orleans bet.
You're not
going to
like the other team behind them.
Who's after New Orleans?
I'll let you guess.
Who the hell? It's not Chicago, I'm assuming.
No.
Is it Arizona? Rams?
Rams.
Rams.
The Arizona Rams.
The Arizona Rams. Big fan of that team, man.
Cardinals after them, Bears, and then Niners.
What is it with
That's
Vegas
the
and the Rams love? If there's any team that you're buying, or not buying, but discrediting for the wins that they have under their belt, wouldn't it be the Rams? Wins have come against the NFC East.
We can maybe hold this because we got a busy whip around today.
They win tonight. They can prove me wrong.
You're not wrong on the Ram thing, but you're also kind of going against the logical thinking of some on Seattle. You beat Minnesota, Dallas.
Oh, sure. I get it. But you have Russell Wilson.
New England.
That's my argument with Seattle.
Right.
No, their defense sucks, and I'll never make a counter argument against. There is no counter. Their defense is awful.
Yeah.
Jamal Adams is out. That's their best defensive player, so you got to give him the benefit there. But even when he was playing, they couldn't stop a nosebleed. The reason you prop up Seattle in instances is because they have one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL.
All right, we got a loaded NFL whip around, a lot to get to in the National Football League. We'll do it next, hour two on radio.com and Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.